This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It's been a good week. Got a lot of things done we needed to get done. Slogged through some other things. I've spent days I have spent working on scrubbing up some data that was supplied to us in inconvenient forms. But it's one of those rush jobs, has to get done, it's gotta get done, And the reason it's a rush job is because I'm looking across at some of the houses next to my place of work, and apparently a kitten has gotten up on a rooftop somehow, and now it's sitting there and calling out and crying, and the people with the, I don't know if it's their kitten or what, but they're throwing like brooms up on top of this roof to try to knock the kitten down. Yes, good luck with that. So anyways, spent a lot of days kind of scrubbing up data. I'm getting closer to getting this thing finished, and it has to be done by the end of the year, and we've got plenty of things to work on, so I'm just trying to get this knocked out. But that's fine. You know, it's all just billable hours to me. This data was supposed to be supplied to us at the latest sometime in August, and the people who were supposed to be supplying the data to us forgot. And so they just realized last week that they had forgot. So we're scrubbing it up. It's fine. Anyways, so that's fine. Writing is going fine. I'm actually on schedule this week. Yay. So I'm on book 20, and I think I just started chapter 11, or I just finished chapter 11. So I'm on track there. I'm closing in on 50,000 words, and I think. Anyways, one way or another, I'm on track. So that's good. And the story's going fine. Things are developing fine. I'm, you know, still throwing balls into the air at this point. So we'll have to get some of that resolved. But I think it's going to be fine. Still don't know what I'm doing for the epilogue, which is, you know, the emotional part. It's supposed to be the emotional part. And I don't think I know what the parable is yet, which I need to get that done. And I don't know what the nursery rhyme is yet either. So I'm just writing along. We'll see what comes out of all this. But yeah, I think this is going to be, you know, it'll be in line with the other books that I've done in this series. And I think it's going to be fine. And this is the middle point for the last set of 8 books, and so there needs to be kind of a big revelation or a big something at the end of this book, and I do have a big something for the end of this book, so yay. So that's good. And then I was telling a friend today that I think once I get this book done, then it's pretty much a dead run until the end of the series. I can't introduce anyone else. You know, I've just got to get all these storylines wrapped up in the next 4 books, which seems like a lot of space since each book is about 450 pages, 420, 450. The last book was only 416, but most of them have been about 450. You know, so there's a considerable number of pages in 4 of those books. But I have a lot of storylines to wrap up. So I need to kind of get a definitive list together to see what those are and then get them done. as well as bring everything to a satisfying conclusion and allow everybody to have their hero moment and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, lots to do. But, as of right now, pretty happy with it. It's fine. You know, we'll be okay. We have small groups coming over tonight, and so I am heading home, and we'll need to get some things done as soon as I get home. So hopefully, you know, I will have this wrapped up by the time I get home. Costuming is going fine. Tomorrow and Saturday is actually a dual holiday weekend. Same costume, but dual holiday. So we're celebrating Wear It Pink Day and the Sweetest Day. So the only difference is that I have a different apron to wear. So both of them are a full body candy cane outfit. And I just made a little apron to go over the nether regions there, which it was intending to be more modest, but the extra little apron I made for Wear It Pink Day ends up looking like a mini skirt because it cinches in its waist. My beloved kind of gave me a look, and I went, well, you know, I just kind of kept moving forward. I could either wear it without the apron or, you know, so that was unconscious and unintended. But it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Have some breakfast. I have a breakfast scheduled with my buddy for Friday. Don't have anything scheduled for Saturday, but I'm going to follow up with a new friend and try to get that under control. So this should be fine. So that's good. That's good. That's good. I'm also this Saturday going to be going out to a friend's house. I tried last week, and the rear projector screen that I had sat for so long, the screen had shrunk. So that wasn't good. And it meant that, you know, it wouldn't fit. So I have a new projector screen, and we're going to take that out, give that a try, see if that works out. I have a heat gun, and I could probably heat up the screen, and we could probably get it to fit. Then I could send the projector screen back that I just bought, save myself a couple of $100s. But we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. So all is well there. This is, in one sense, a momentous podcast. And the reason that it's momentous is I was able to do something for this podcast that I have been wanting to do for years. Often, when I find a YouTube video that I like, I need to get some notes off of it so that I have notes with me when I'm talking. To get those notes, what I typically do is I go into the transcript on YouTube, copy the entire transcript, paste it into my Word document, remove all the timings off of the transcript, which then turns it into this big blob of text, and then go through by hand and highlight the stuff that I think is important to talk about. For years now, I've been waiting to be able to ask some AI something somewhere to summarize the YouTube video for me. And since ChatGPT-4 is connected up to Bing, I thought, you know, why don't we try this? So, I went out to ChatGPT-4 and I said, can you summarize this video for me? And ChatGPT-4 said no. But then it said, however, there are these two websites that could do that for you. And so I went out to summary.tech. Summary.tech, I think it's called. Just put in the link to the YouTube video, and it is calculating this stuff ahead of time because it came back really, really fast. But it comes back, and its first pass is, here's the first hour, here's the second hour, whatever, however long it is. Summarizes it by the hour and kind of gives you a good overview. And then there's a show more button, and you click the show more button, and it goes down to every 10 minutes. It's summarizing every 10 minutes, which is really cool. This looks like it's getting ready to fall off, so I'm going to pick it up and move it back here, which is really cool. And I read through the summary, and I was like, yep, that's close enough for my purposes. So whereas it would take me, I don't know, half an hour to prepare notes for a podcast, I knew the two videos, not just one, but the two videos that I wanted to talk about today. And I was done like in 5 minutes because I just went out and said, summarize this one, summarize that one, and then got the basic thing in. And then last night I did go through and just scan through it and just mark the stuff that I wanted to highlight, but it was so much faster. So yay. That works. It's episode 760. This is a milestone. Because now ChatGPT or some other AI can actually summarize videos for me and I can get to it. And that saves me time. Sorry, I had to yawn. So anyways, I was very interested in these two YouTube videos because they affirm a lot of what I've been thinking and saying for years. And of course, it's always nice to see PhDs writing books about things that affirm what you have suspected about systems of the body for years. And specifically, these two videos were talking about hormones and their effect on gender behavior and those types of things. One video was about testosterone and the changes that it makes in the body. The second video was about hormonal birth control and the changes that it makes in the body. And they were both really good and really interesting. And so I'm just going to kind of quickly run through the things that they were talking about because this is important. And I have speculated from some time, not original with me, but because I had heard of problems that women were having with hormonal birth control. And on the basis of that, I had looked at it from a systems analyst viewpoint, said, well, yeah, I mean, that would make sense. Not having done any real research, more research is being done now, and in fact, yes. But there's an explanation for why we are still using it beyond the fact that the pharmaceutical companies can make money from it. So this was on a podcast called Modern Wisdom, who's podcast number 555, and it was a discussion with Dr. Sarah Hill, who had recently published a book, and the title of the podcast was Hold up, cars are stopped. The title of the podcast was The Psychological Impact of Hormonal Birth Control Pills. So, Dr. Hill, first of all, explained ovulatory cycles, which are important. And this is something that men often are just clueless about. They don't realize that every 28 days, a woman who is fertile is cycling up for 14 days and cycling down for 14 days and cycling up for 14 days and cycling down for 14 days. And the whole point of all that cycling is to make her fertile for basically 2 or 3 days, I think it is, or close to fertile, you know, for a week in there so that she can get pregnant. And the other 3 weeks is just maintenance, which is an experience that men absolutely don't have, period. And, you know, this is yet another one of those situations where when people say, oh, I feel like a woman, my response is, you may conceptualize of yourself as a woman, as men often conceptualize of women, but a huge part of a woman's life is this ovulatory cycle. And if you're not experiencing that ovulatory cycle, you don't really know what it, quote unquote, feels like to be a woman. And to suggest otherwise is to dismiss what is a significant part of the female experience. So, anyways, what's interesting about the ovulatory cycle is there's obviously two main sections of it. There's cycling up to get pregnant, and there's cycling down when a pregnancy doesn't happen. And those two things require distinctly different performance from a woman. And in fact, it is designed, the female body is designed to reflect that. So when a woman is cycling up and she's almost fertile and she's getting ready to be fertile, in fact, as part of that cycle, the body, a female body, is producing more estrogen levels. The reason that the body is producing more estrogen levels is because the body is preparing to release an egg. And estrogen levels not only contribute to that, but they contribute to making women more aggressive and more risk takers. And so the libido gets amped up in that time prior to releasing an egg, so that the woman will go out and find a sex partner and have sex with them, and her egg will be fertilized. It's all just kind of built into the plumbing. Conversely, after the egg releases, estrogen levels go down and progesterone levels come up, and that tends to make women more sedentary. It tends to reduce sex drive, because at that point, if there is a fertilized egg, it has to still be implanted. And so the body is kind of conserving resources. It's allowing, you know, a woman to be more sedentary. And then in the process, it wants to kind of improve the chances that that egg is going to be implanted. So hormonal birth control is in fact a dose every day of progesterone, which is a synthetic hormone that mimics progesterone, the second half of the cycle. And it stops ovulation because it makes the body think that an egg has been released and now it doesn't have to do anything for a while. So that's how hormonal birth control works. It tricks the body into thinking that there is a potential for pregnancy. The egg has been released. The egg might be trying to, the non-existent egg might be trying to implant itself in the uterus wall. And so therefore we don't need to ovulate. Now then, okay, well, that's clever. You know, whoever figured that out, that was clever. Except the fact that we're faced with a situation where, yet again, medical science thinks, oh, yeah, we can just flip that switch and there won't be any consequences. But there are consequences. And it's well known that there are consequences for women being on the pill. However, having said that, women having access to oral contraception has made a huge revolution in women's lives. Because like Dr. Hill was saying, prior to this, the fact was women had difficulty planning and making big life choices. She said, like, my grandmother would have never thought about going to college and trying to get a degree because there was no way to count on the fact that, you know, you wouldn't end up pregnant and then just have to drop out. And so becoming pregnant, dealing with the possibility of becoming pregnant, that was such a big part of women's life before the pill that once women had access to oral contraception that could almost guarantee that they wouldn't get pregnant, everything changed. And I think Dr. Hill was the one who said that, like, in the year after birth control became available, college enrollment for women went up like 1,000%. I mean, it was just, it made this huge, huge, really important change. And she said, as part of this whole talk, she was asked, okay, so why isn't there a male birth pill? And she said, well, she said, you have to understand that men are not willing to put up with what women are willing to put up with contraception, because, you know, the consequences of pregnancy are so different between women and men. So she said, if you've got a man, you know, and he gets a woman pregnant, he has all kinds of options to him to try to convince her not to have that child. But he said, for a woman, once she gets pregnant, there's all kinds of things that cascade out. Now, of course, there's abortion available and all those types of things, but those have their own consequences as well. So she said the value of ensuring that you're not going to be pregnant is so much higher for women that when you ask them things like, how's your birth control going? What's it like being on birth control? They'll say, oh, it's great. It's great. Yeah, I have headaches and I'm achy all the time and all I want to do is sleep, but yeah, it's great. Well, how's your birth control? Oh, well, it's great. You know, I'm depressed all the time and this, that, and the, you know, but it's better than the alternative. I'm looking for my glass case. What did I do with my glass case? I don't know. I'll just put these in here for now. It's better than the alternative. It's much, much, much better than the alternative. And so women are willing to put up with this. What's interesting, though, is that now that you've, in essence, locked women into certain narrow portions of times in that cycle, once you've taken away their natural cycle, there are consequences that come out to that. She said, for instance, research has shown that women's partner preferences change through the menstrual cycle, with estrogen levels influencing a heightened preference for more masculine features. So when a woman is ramping up under normal circumstances and her estrogen is rising and her libido is rising, she will prefer more masculine appearance. On the side, when women are on the pill, they prefer less masculinized male faces compared to those of natural cycling because they're looking for a man, under normal circumstances, they would be looking for a man who is more dependable, not just good-looking and a good lay in bed. And so women go through, who are naturally cycling, go through this process of every month, you know, they get more randy when they're getting ready to be fertile, and then after that passes, you know, they settle down and start evaluating men based on how good of a provider they are, and et cetera, all those other tangible things as opposed to this intangible thing of, oh, he's sexy. Which leads to some interesting problems because many women are on the pill before they get married. And then when they go off the pill, all of a sudden they're back in natural cycles and their preferences change. And so that can happen. to work out fine, but it can also kind of throw a kink in the works, because what the woman wants now in a partner is different than what she has, because being on the pill changed that dynamic. So according to studies, Dr. Hill said, women who choose their partners while on birth control reported greater satisfaction with their partner's financial resources, while naturally cycling women were more satisfied with the sexual aspects of their relationship. In addition, coming off birth control may cause turmoil within relationships, especially if a woman finds the relationship isn't what she wanted or was attracted to. So, you know, however, again, hormonal birth control is, you know, of such benefit to women that a lot of women, they'll put up with that. Now then, however, you know, there's a larger context to this as well, because one of the things that's been known is that testosterone levels are dropping in men, and there are some reasons for that. But there may also be a consequence of testosterone levels dropping in men because ovulation is being suppressed in the vast majority of fertile women, because there's so many women who are on the pill. So if you've got all of these people on the pill and you're suppressing ovulation, you're suppressing the cues to estrogen, which may be leading to a decreased level of testosterone in men, and a demand for men for the type who have lower testosterone. Because if a woman is on the pill, she's looking for more of the tangible things like, is he a good provider? Is this, that, and the other? And those guys are typically not the high testosterone muscle bound guys. She also had some interesting observations that she had heard from many bisexual women who noticed a change in their sexuality upon going on or off the pill. And she said this may raise questions about the high rates of bisexuality in women at present and how much is being influenced by the pill. And so she was telling stories about she has friends who are bisexual who have gone off the pill, and then a couple of months later will tell her, you know, what's really weird is for 1 week out of the month, I'm heterosexual again. Well, that's because of the hormones. There is also, and she did talk about this, there is also, according to the studies she has said are being done, that specifically in adolescent women, it occurs in other women, but on average, in general, specifically in adolescent women, hormonal birth control has been linked to an increased risk in anxiety and depression. Some research suggests such risk is almost tripled in young women compared to adult women, and those risks continue to increase even after women go off the birth control pill. This is a concern about the long-term effects of hormonal birth control use in adolescent women, and further research is needed. In other words, what she's saying, if you put a young woman on hormonal birth control, in some studies, it's shown that you're actually tripling her sensitivity to anxiety and depression. Because what you're doing is you're putting her body into a state where it's trying to protect what it thinks is a potential pregnancy. So, of course, your anxiety is going to be ramped up because you're trying to get pregnant. That's what the body thinks is going on. So, and when you put someone in that constant state, they never have the back and forth of feeling that anxiety start to lift when you have the surge in estrogen, and then have it start dropping off again when you find out you're not pregnant. And so this wonderful cycle that would help women sort of balance out those feelings of anxiety and depression, what you've done is you've frozen women into one thing. And so, yeah, it makes sense that we would have increasing cases of anxiety and depression, especially in young women. In addition, Dr. Hill was saying there's a possibility that being on hormonal birth control may change the desirability of women to both men and women, because women on birth control could be less attractive due to the absence of subtle changes in their behavior and physiology that indicate high fertility. Women on birth control may also have lower desirability to potential partners, which could lead to meaningful changes in their choices. You know, so you have all that stuff going on as well. And what Dr. Hill was saying is we just need to have a good conversation about this and see what else might be a potential for birth control in women that would be just as convenient as the pill, but maybe wouldn't come with these side effects. Now then, I am home. I do have to get ready for small groups. So I'm going to save the testosterone speech for next week. But it's pretty interesting as well as to what the role of testosterone is and what's going on with that. That's Dr. Carol Hooven, again, on the Modern Wisdom podcast, and that was episode 544. But we will talk about that next week because I have things to do. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.